This is the home of Jerry's Percentages.
Stop with the f***ing booing.
Overdrive with Hayes, Noodles, and the O-Dog on TSN 1050, making your drive home a lot more fun.
Hour 2 Overdrive, TSN 1050, and on the TSN Go app. Brian Hayes, the O-Dog, Jeff O'Neill, Jamie Noodles, McLennan around the table. Ray Ferraro will join us here in just a moment. Pete Walker, the pitching coach for the Jays at 5:30.
And at some point, I have to get into a horrific train ride I had coming back from Florida. And what you can allow people around you to do on a train overnight if they're causing a disturbance.
Yeah, you better step in.
Like in which way, though? Like, what kind of a disturbance?
Keeping me awake in a way that was so annoying. You would have, as particular as you are, you would have gone crazy. We'll get into it later because...
Well, was he being loud? Was he talking? Was he snoring? Was he...
This man was a giant of a man, okay? And as soon as I laid eyes on this character, I knew that in some way or fashion... He was going to ruin my night. And sure as hell, he sat right behind me, a mountain of a man, okay?
Yeah.
And I've never seen anybody do this in my life. He went to sleep at 4 o'clock at night, and he slept right through the night and got up at 8 or 9 in the morning. Didn't budge. And snored so loud as a human and a passenger. Am I allowed to wake him up and say, can you cut it out?
I would have.
Let's bring in our expert on that.
Yes.
A guy who's usually a people person and loves to travel.
Oh, yes.
And is always welcoming to any of your foibles. Anything that you have that most people in society would probably take issue with, our next guest is always there for you with open arms. Here's Ray Ferraro, our TSN hockey analyst. Ray on Overdrive is a presentation of CRSO Joint Formula 14. What's the rule there, Ray?
First of all, I've never been so described so accurately.
Yes,
I really appreciate that. You put your seat back as far as it goes.
I did, and that was the problem because I was closer to him.
No, but I mean, if you jolt it back, you can probably hit like either his knees or something that he wakes him up, and you get, oh, sorry about that. But then you stop the snoring. Then he starts again. You got to do it again. Like this becomes. Mano a mano. You can't lose.
Yeah, I agree.
You can't let yourself lose.
Yeah, but who's
even
gonna,
when you're losing?
How can you know a guy's going to put in a 16-hour shift of sleep?
But why don't you just get up and walk by him and accidentally bump into him? Why can't you do that? I've done that.
I'm going to agree. I think because now his was just snoring or was he just like sprawled everywhere too?
Just imagine the loudest, grossest snore you've ever heard in your life for 16 hours straight. He was complaining about how far the beverage cart was away from him because it was like 9 carts away. And he's like, man, I'm not doing that. I handed him a beer from my seat and didn't even look at him. I just stuck it over the seat. That thing was snatched out of my hands, I swear to you, and opened and drank all within 10 seconds.
Just a burp and a thank you.
And then a snore. He had a time to himself.
Could you not move? Like, was there nowhere to go?
No, there was nowhere to go, man. Full train.
I think I'd have to say, hey, sorry, pal. You're snoring so loud, you're keeping the whole car up.
No,
yeah.
I didn't have the jam.
No good Samaritan in that car stood up and like, because guaranteed everyone heard him, correct? How many people were in the car?
Oh, there was hundreds of people. Like,
and they could all witness this. And nobody.
This guy ruined at minimum 25 people's
and
nights.
And nobody had the gall to get out. Like I would have for
but
sure.
But the blue hairs, they were prepared because they had the earphones, the sleep goggles, whatever they are.
The eye mask?
Yeah.
See, I've got to move.
That's a solid move.
I've got to move on the plane where somebody... I hate it when people, like, recline back in front of you. So I've got to move where I take a water bottle and I jam my knee into the water bottle. So I'll put the water bottle in the pocket in the back of the seat, and then I would jam my knee into it, and it digs into their back. So
it's like
they get it.
Yeah, man, that's like it's okay, it's so warfare.
Now I think the thing that I hate the most is, so I'm sitting there, my seat's not reclined, and some guy's got to get in and out behind me, and they use my seat as a bracing agent.
Yes.
And so I turn around and I say, it's not a trampoline. Could you not do that? I'm just sitting there, man. And the guy, my seat's going back and forth like I'm on a trampoline. I hate it. Can't stand it.
Yeah.
So I have to say something. I just can't sit there and take it. It bugs me.
I kind of sympathize for this guy because I've been that guy on the way back home from
Dude,
the Bahamas.
You like are not this guy, trust me.
3-day bender. I'm like a garden gnome hacking Zeds. You know,
what was the estimated LBs of this gentleman?
I'm not going to get into that because that people are going to start torturing us about judging or whatever. But I'll tell you what, this guy was putting a flex into a New Balance shoe that was unmatched. And it was I looked at him and I said, that guy somehow, some way is going to ruin my life. And he kept me awake. He was honestly the flex in these New Balances. He should have just ripped the sole off and put it on the side of his ankle because it wasn't. It was a move
Noodle?
That was just.
Yes.
What about early morning flight? Oh. You're in the gate and you're like, not that guy and not that guy, please, not those two.
Yeah.
And like clockwork, one of them is in 12B, then you're at 12C against the window. And you are like a piece of toast against the thing.
Oh, yeah.
And you're like, I knew it. I could see it. I could just smell it.
Yep.
And you just get crushed.
It's when you start to profile. Like, you passenger profile. That's what you do because I like to get on the plane. I'm in, you know, group one or whatever. So I like to get on early, get situated and settled in. And then the minute that you're sitting there, you start to passenger profile and say, nope, not that guy. Or, oh, yeah, not that bad. You know, like, depending on the type of mood you're in. And then, you know, God forbid if somebody, like, you know, comes in and they want to chat you up the whole time, like, especially if it's early, it's not going to work
headphones.
Out well. Yeah.
Headphones.
I'm polite. I mean, I always chat people up, but I prefer to kind of just get into my TV mode and that type of stuff. But, boy, you literally passenger profile. That's what I do.
So when O saw those shoes flexing away, he's like, this is not happening good. I can see it.
No, and we're going northbound, and we're on this train for 24 hours, and
there
there's
was
no
a gritty
escape.
Veteran last year when I checked into the train, giant mustache, and he was just informed that the smoking car was taken off the train. He said, give me my truck back. I'm driving. He refused to go on the train because the smoking car was taken off. He goes, screw this. Give me my truck back. I'm driving.
Of course he's got a truck, too.
Oh, for sure.
He wasn't going to say, give me my smart car back.
Yeah, I know.
No way.
There was no chance that was happening.
Dude, he said, there's no chance in hell I'm getting on that train without the smoking car.
So he decided to drive for 12 hours.
I literally, as he walked by me on the way out, I wanted to shake his hand and say, you are a true gentleman.
Oh, man.
All right, we got to get to hardcore.
All right, well, let's get to a tweet that just got sent my way here because, right, we were talking about Kadri in the previous hour and his reputation with the refs and where it's at now because it's become abundantly clear this guy, the memo has been sent out amongst the refereeing community that it doesn't matter what happens to him, you do not give him a call. And on Saturday night, he got laid out from behind. It was a blatant penalty. There was no embellishment on his end. It was a blatant, blatant penalty. And it didn't get called, I believe, because it was number 43. But he's put himself in this position because, you know, he draws a lot of penalties. He does embellish. And I believe that he's becoming even more animated with his embellishment recently, where earlier in the year it felt like it was, you know, he had it down to a T where he'd hit the ice but bounce up again quickly and keep kind of playing it out. So it looked as if it was more forced than it really was, where recently it seems like it's been more animated. The slash from Goudreau, a couple of other plays over the past few games. And Peter sending a tweet saying, that's a horrible take, Hayes. Kadri hasn't changed his play at all. It's the fact that the media is bashing him now. That's why the refs aren't giving him penalties. What do you make of that tweet?
Yeah, that's what. That's why the refs are changing the way they officiate the game, because the media is talking about it. If that's the case, I guess they'll talk about it today, because Babcock's been boo-hooing it for 2 days. Oh, my guy's being fouled. They've obviously got a memo that's gone around. They missed the call. I didn't see that anybody was saying anything when, who was it now? Who smacked McQuaid in the face with a stick with 3 minutes? Like the rebound, the puck was up in the air.
Yeah, I remember that.
Right? Like, hey, look, the call gets missed, the call gets missed. The call on Kadri was I can't believe it wasn't a penalty. I mean, Krejci stopped, Chara stopped. Toronto almost scored on the play because they stopped and thought it was a penalty, and Toronto got the puck back. I mean, there's no question that it was a penalty. As far as a memo being sent, in my experience and the guys I talk to and have talked to over, it's not like I talk to a bunch of refs all the time, they're all telling each other, what do you see? They all talk to each other about, hey, what went on, what's going on. They all get internal plays to review on their computers. But they, of course, they talk to each other. And if somebody's getting burned on an embellishment, it's embarrassing to the ref. And you bet they're telling their coworkers. Absolutely. And that goes on irrespective of what the media says.
He might find his point total goes up, because if you don't go down, you're going to stay up and you're going to have the puck. So just grind through it.
Like he got steamrolled or cross-checked on Saturday. Absolutely. That was 100% a penalty. But, you know, sometimes I think he's so self-protective, he's almost delusional about, he says, you know, I've never dove, I've never embellished anything, I've never gotten a penalty, which maybe he hasn't got the fine, but of course he embellishes. And you know what? I did when I played too. And almost everybody I know has at some time, mm-hmm. because you're trying to draw a penalty. Mm-hmm. But there are times now that you've dug yourself a hole, and you're going to have to work your way out of it. And he will, if he chooses to. Now, what Babcock's done is coach politicking 101. Take the case to the media. Take the case so the officials maybe can hear it. Talk about, okay, now it's a penalty, call a penalty. You taught him a lesson. That's just politicking. And Barry Trotz does it. He does it a lot. Hitchcock does it all the time. Like, all the time. Babs does it a lot. He's done it for a decade. Any good coach you can mention, almost all of them do it. They all try. They all try and send a message so maybe the officials will hear and maybe it'll make them think twice before making a call.
With Ray Ferraro, our TSN hockey analyst, news out of Russia, there's been a couple of different reports, but now Yakupov was speaking with a Russian outlet, Sport Express. This feels like another one of those situations where European players start talking in their native tongue and they don't think Google Translate is around. Like, you see it almost every offseason. Like, a Swedish player will say something, or a Russian player.
Antti Ranta.
Yeah, it comes out.
The Blackhawks.
That's right. Last summer, Ovechkin's done it before, I think. Like, a couple guys have said things, and it's like, dude, you realize this will be translated, and the teams are going to find out about it back in North America. But Yakupov is the source here. He was quoted as saying that he has asked for a trade out of Edmonton. The Oilers gave him permission to speak with other teams. He said about 8 teams were interested, but something went wrong before the deadline, and the trade fell through. But Shirelli, he can't even deny it, because it's Yakupov saying, this is what happened. Like, I asked for a trade, and they said, yeah, go ahead. Like, if you can find something, you come back to us whenever you're ready.
What a circus.
It's just, like, this guy, he's into his fourth year. He's reaching all-time first overall bust territory. He's not dead yet, but he's
creeping
reaching
around
it.
Patrick Stefan.
He's real close to it right now.
I mean, I was trying to think of it today. How many first overall, I guess you could call it, busts have there been in the last 40 years, 30 years? Let's say 30 years. Like, you can think of a few right off the top of your head. Would Rick DiPietro.
Yeah,
we're going to have to pull that one
Dickie
down.
Be careful there. Dickie for sure.
Yeah, that'll
sure.
work.
Would Rick DiPietro be one of them?
I think so. For first overall, absolutely.
Well, there's injury involved there.
Right.
There's, so it's not yeah. to the level of a Stefan or.
But
or
like, where would you go back? Like, was Brian Lawton? Or he had a long career, did he not?
Yeah, but he was nowhere near what you would expect a number one pick to be.
Right.
You know, Yakupov, the defenders in Edmonton will say that he had a good rookie year, that he had a decent run last year with Derek Roy, he had a good run with Connor McDavid this year. But when you watch him play, he's a complimentary player who needs somebody to get him the puck in a position to shoot it, because that's what he can do. And I heard him described this year, it's the best description of a player I've heard. It made me laugh so hard because it's so accurate. He plays like he's being chased by bees. and if you watch him play, he stick handles a million miles an hour. He skates and does that hoppy stride thing kind of all over the place, but nothing happens. It's like he's got a pack of bees behind him. And so he's asked for this trade, apparently, back whenever. Who's interested? He makes $2.5 million next year. We keep hearing about the cap's going to be flat. Who's going to take a flyer on that player?
But think about that,
Ray. I don't see it.
Think about that. Taking a flyer on a guy who went first overall.
Four
years ago.
If I was Chicago or LA, I'd do it.
You would, eh?
Yeah, just I think if you get him around a guy like Jonathan Toews, just maybe.
But he would be on the third line in Chicago, maybe.
The problem is none of the really good teams have any cap space.
Yeah, they don't.
Someone's going to take a flyer on him. First overall picks always get a second shot.
Like, they get nine lives.
Yeah, you're right.
Daigle's an example.
They get nine lives, I agree, but Brian just hit the nail on the head. It's a take a flyer on a player.
It's amazing. And it says really all you need to know about Edmonton and them winning the lottery every single year is that they
actually
want it.
Uplifts you talking about Edmonton, doesn't it? Because it's not.
Well, outside of McDavid and Hall, I mean, Hall, I would take Sagan over Hall, but Hall's a very good player, and you could argue certainly worthy of a first overall pick. But Nugent Hopkins doesn't scream first overall talent. Yakupov clearly isn't first overall talent.
But yeah, and one thing for sure, you have to take into consideration what the draft was like in the year. Those, you know, maybe nobody was a consensus number one. I'm sure you guys saw the story that was written this weekend about Yakupov, that in that draft, in their draft meetings, the scouts in Edmonton were, and this story's been around for a while, but the scouts were 9-2 to take Ryan Murray.
Yeah.
And something happened in a meeting with Daryl Cates and Craig McTavish and Kevin Lowe and Steve Tambellini, and they picked Yakupov. Now, why do you have any scouts if they so overwhelmingly vote to take somebody else and you just pick the guy you want?
Especially considering the fact you're dying for a defenseman, any kind of defenseman.
Well, but let's also remember here, Ryan Murray isn't exactly Drew Doughty. I mean, even if they took him.
No, but Ryan Murray is a better player than the Nail Yakupov, and he's been waylaid by injuries in his first couple of years, but he's now playing 20 plus minutes a game.
Wow.
And he will prove to be, in my opinion, without a shadow of a doubt, to be a better player when you look back at their careers than Yakupov will. The only thing that'll sideline him will be injury.
You're right, Ray, and we were talking before he came on in the last hour. You know, is that management's fault, or is that the owner who owns the team and can be a super fan if he wants and meddle if he wants? I mean, all accounts point to that. So how do you, you know, if you're an Edmonton fan, how do you judge on that regime when you're getting your marching orders from above?
Well, the problem is, no matter what you think of the owner, you'll still judge the guys that are sitting in the traditional GM, assistant GM chair. And we know there's cases where teams are pushed into a line of business or a line of order of how they're going to proceed by ownership that they don't believe in. And unfortunately, there's 30 GM's jobs, and so guys will pick their battles. And so maybe Tambellini, who hasn't worked in the league since he left Edmonton, said, you know what, I got to go along with this. The guy with the highest upside maybe is Yakupov. I'll take Yakupov. And sometimes I guess sometimes you don't have the right bullet in the chamber to win that one. But the fans will they'll be angry with the owner, and then eventually it seems like they'll forget about that anger and redirect it over towards the management.
Or just be completely distracted by the fact that Connor McDavid's there now and
forget everything. Exactly.
You know, everything that happened in the past, whatever. Who cares? Anyway, we got to fly, buddy. Good stuff. Good having you back. We'll do it again tomorrow at 5 p.m.
Yeah, back to work tomorrow officially. So got the Leafs tomorrow in Florida, and we'll see how they do after tonight's game.
Oh, should be a barn burner. Should be a barn burner, buddy. I can hear the excitement in your voice.
Can't wait.
All right, buddy. There he is.
Later.
Ray Ferraro, TSN hockey analyst, ran Overdrive, was a presentation of Sierra-Sil Joint Formula 14. Pete Walker, the pitching coach of the Blue Jays, in about 10 minutes. Did Drew Hutchison have one of the worst 24-hour spans in pro sports over the past decade?
Yes.
I think there's reason for saying yes. We'll tell you why next. Pete Walker will join us, the pitching coach of the Blue Jays. He's coming up in just a couple of minutes. Brian Lewis, former NHL ref and the director of officiating, he'll join us to kick off the 6 p.m. hour. We'll get back into the Kadri relationship with the refs. The Leafs are in action tonight. Raptors in action tonight. Dwayne Casey with an all-time quote earlier this afternoon. If you missed it earlier, we will play it for you later in the afternoon. But the news around the Jays today is basically revolving around the starting rotation. Aaron Sanchez will start the year as a starter. So we'll catch up with Pete in a moment, and we'll ask him about what his ceiling is this year. You know, did he steal this job, or was it really his to lose when he showed up to camp? And the other big news item is Drew Hutchison, who has been sent to the minors, and last year he was the opening day starter. Opening day starter to starting the season in AAA. And you can make an argument, this guy's past 24 hours, some of the worst, worst moments you can go through. Because we talked about this in the previous hour. He took a ball off the head.
I don't know how he wasn't hurt more than he was. He was not even looking. He was face to first base and took it on the side of his bean.
Yeah, A.J. Jimenez hit him basically right in the temple.
Yeah.
Like, he popped him because it was a horrible throw. He was trying to get the guy out at second. He would have missed him by a mile. That would have ended up in right field.
Well, that
thing had some mustard on it, too.
Oh, yeah, man. He was chucking. And he got Hutch right in the head.
He took him like a champ. And it was right here, like on the right side of the head, or kind of almost in the back, I thought. But, man, that was a shot.
It was a shot. And to add insult to injury, he gets up the next day. He's probably not feeling that great. And they tell him, you are being demoted to the minors. So he is off the AAA Buffalo. And you have to wonder where Hutchison goes from here, because his inconsistencies have been well documented. His split starts, like a couple of years ago, I think it was, he couldn't pitch at home, but he pitched great on the road. And then last year, I believe, he pitched great at home, but couldn't pitch on the road. And you've got a new regime in here with Atkins and Shapiro. They got no association with the guy. You can't have that kind of inconsistency and expect to be a part of a World Series caliber team. And that's where he's at right now. But he probably knew this was coming. And yesterday he probably felt, okay, this is my day. I got to show it. And he takes one right off the head.
Dude, it's a tough part of sports, man. You're seeing the young stud come up, and then you see what happens when he makes hay.
Yeah.
A guy's ultimately going to lose his job.
Well, I mean, he's got to go down there and grind now. He's got to grind because at some point they're going to need 6, 7, 8 starting pitchers. You know, they're not going to have the 5 guys they're going to break camp with each throw 32 starts and be perfectly healthy all year. That just doesn't happen. So Hutchison's got to take the memo, go to the minors, keep working on his repertoire, and he could get called up at any point. Maybe within a couple of weeks he's back up with the team. But, man, that was an ugly scene yesterday, him taking that right off the head.
You couldn't help but laugh, but it was ugly.
Once you know that he's all right.
Once you know he's all right, you can give it a bit of a chuckle.
Yeah.
That's the way I treated it.
Okay, I'm with you on that. Let's bring in the pitching coach for the Blue Jays. Here is Pete Walker. How you doing, Pete?
Good, guys. Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. How often do you see that, a catcher just popping a pitcher right off the head when he's trying to catch a stealing base runner?
That is very rare. It surprised me. I was actually looking. I saw Hemi come up and make the throw, and my eyes immediately went to second base, and the ball never got there. So, you know, I didn't really see it hit Hutch in the head, but certainly saw the ball deflect and roll towards the third base bag over in that area. So it was after I watched the replay and on video, it was a pretty scary moment, to be honest with you. But you're right. It turned out fine. Hutch is feeling great. I think a little embarrassed as well as Hemi.
Did the catcher even bother trying to apologize for that, or do you just let that go?
Yeah. You know what? He was a little shaken up. I'm not going to lie. You know, we had to talk to him after and tell him, you know, he didn't do anything wrong. You know, he made a throw. It was a little low throw to second base. But, you know, most pitchers, it's one of those things you don't talk about too much. But, you know, after you release the baseball and a stolen base attempt, you usually peek to see the catcher come up throwing. So there is a split second where you kind of see the trajectory of the ball. But Hutch, for some, it was just kind of a rare thing where he turned his head completely and was just totally looking at second base and until he got hit in the head. So it was definitely scary, and you see the replay, it was scary, and fortunately he's fine.
Well, and Jimenez is a young kid. Do you think next time he gets out there catching a vet, like if it's Dickey or something like that, Dickey will have fun with him and just hit the deck or start running towards the dugout?
I don't know. He took a little ribbon from some of the guys. I know Josh told he was all over, but it was all in good fun there because Hutch was fine and him—he's fine. You know, it's just one of those freak things that actually happened to me. Mike Piazza hit me with a throw to second base when I was with the Mets. And that was pretty embarrassing. Hit me right off the rear end. It ricocheted right into our dugout. So it was a blooper moment for sure, but a little less scary than Hutch's.
With Pete Walker, the pitching coach for the Blue Jays, in terms of Hutchinson today, again, it was announced you guys are going to start the year with him down in Buffalo. This is a guy who was the opening day starter for your team a year ago. What kind of message do you send to him? He's still a relatively young guy in pro sports. In terms of how he keeps a positive attitude from here on out?
Yeah, he certainly will. He is young. I think people forget that. You know, I've heard his name for the last few years. You know, I know he went through the injury as well, but, you know, you think he's been around for a long time. He's still relatively young in baseball terms and considered inexperienced, really, even though he's pitched at the major league level a little bit. So he's got a lot of years ahead of him. You know, fortunately for him, he's making pretty good money in AAA for the time being. He's still a big part of this team. He's going to come up and make starts for us. You know, it's not necessarily how you start, it's how you finish, and I think he's going to go down there and do what he's supposed to do. It gives us a lot of depth and security knowing he's down there. But he's a big part of this team. It was certainly tough. He deserves to be in the major leagues right now. He threw the ball great this spring. And, you know, it's just a situation where, fortunately for the team, you know, we have some depth right now. We had a lot of guys throwing the ball well. And it's just the way it goes for the moment. But certainly things can change, and he can be a big part of this team.
And I think the biggest debate from here anyway up in Toronto, based on what's been going on down there throughout the past 5 or 6 weeks, has really revolved around the rotation and more so about Aaron Sanchez and where he fits in, and a debate whether or not he will be a starter. Will he be in the bullpen? If he starts in the bullpen, can he get back into the rotation? I know John Gibbons was talking about that over the weekend, that, you know, if he starts the year in the bullpen, he may never get back into the rotation throughout his career. And it was announced today you guys came to a decision that he will, in fact, be a starter. Now that that is out there, can you give us some more detail in terms of where your mentality as a staff was going into spring training? Was it his job to lose, or did he have to prove it in camp and kind of steal it from someone else?
Yeah, no, I don't think it was necessarily his job to lose, but I think it had to be undeniable. And, you know, I know the other guys threw very well. Gavin Floyd threw well. He came in, and he was a real pleasant surprise for all of us. You know, obviously I knew him, you know, from more than 3 years ago, to be honest with you. I know the past few years have been tough for him, but, you know, we saw him at the end of last year, and he looked good. But coming in, he was a question mark. But he certainly has answered the bell. He's looked strong all spring. So he was a pleasant surprise and could certainly be in the rotation, and as well as Hutch and Chavez, for that matter. So we're fortunate there. But, you know, I think Sanchez just stood out. And for me, it was somewhat undeniable. And I think, you know, for the staff, it was a difficult decision. You know, Gavin, like I said, could easily be plugged in there. Hutch could be plugged in there. But I think it's Sanchez's time. You know, it's an opportunity for him. He came in strong. He put on 20 pounds. He's repeating his delivery. His stuff is just electric right now. His secondary stuff, I think, has gotten a little bit better. I think it still needs to improve, but I think it's gotten better. And I think it's, you know, his time to take the ball and run with it a little bit. And I think he's worked very hard for that. So, yeah, coming and saying that it was his job to lose, I wouldn't say that at all. I think we had to see him perform well. And we had to, you know, see what the other guys had to offer. But he just, for me and for probably the rest of the staff, he stood out.
In terms of his potential and the ceiling that Aaron Sanchez has, how much buffer room is there? How much growth could still be there in his game?
Yeah, no, I think there is growth there in his game. I think his ceiling is high. He's, you know, obviously his fastball command has gotten better. He's pounding the zone with, you know, 95, 96, 97. I think we saw him in the fifth or sixth inning throw a 99-mile-an-hour backdoor sinker for strike three. So, I mean, his stuff is electric. His secondary stuff is only going to get better. His curveball has improved. He's got a changeup where we've killed some ball speed, and it's actually thrown at a mile an hour too slower. So I think that's going to control bat speed even more, maybe increase the strikeouts. He's coming into his own a little bit, you know, and I think his confidence level is at an all-time high. So we feel good about where he's at. We think he can get better. And, you know, if he is staying healthy and doing what he can do and staying in that rotation, I think he's going to do a lot of good things in the future.
With Pete Walker, the Jays pitching coach, I noticed that yourself, John Gibbons, you guys didn't want to label him necessarily as a fifth starter breaking camp. And I think that's, again, open for debate from my end. I look at Marcus Stroman, who, if he pitches the way he has early into his career, I think he's got ace-like stuff. He has already pitched like an ace early into his career, and he's going to be the opening day starter, and he appears to be your number one guy. But once you move beyond that, Estrada, Dickey, Happ, Sanchez, seems fairly fluid to me. I mean, is that a positive from your end that really any one of those four guys could define themselves as that true number two starter, and maybe all four of them kind of battle for that?
Yeah, you know what? That's a good point. But I'm not as concerned with the number in front of you. Obviously, I think we got five guys, and I hate to put that kind of pressure on Marcus. I know he wants to be that number one guy in the ace, but we got five guys that can win on any given night, I feel, with great defense behind him, a great offense. I don't think, you know, once the season starts, you know, what number you are doesn't really matter so much. You know, so I think, you know, a guy like Sanchez might initially be in the 3, 4, or 5 hole, but he certainly can pitch like a number one. Estrada gets hot. He was as good as anybody in baseball last year. Happ pitched extremely well at the end of last year. I think they're all quality arms, and I really hate to put numbers in front of guys. I really don't even want to put one in front of Stro. I think it's just unexpected, you know, pressure. And, you know, I just think it's one of those things that I try to avoid and let these guys just go out and pitch every fifth day.
We're less than a week away. I mean, the city's buzzing already. We can't wait for the season to get started. I think I can speak for you and the whole team when I say that. So best of luck as the season draws near, and we always appreciate you taking time. Thank you, Pete.
You got it. Anytime, guys. Look forward to seeing you.
There he is, Pete Walker, the pitching coach for the Jays.
You were into that interview.
I had one little question, but I didn't think it tied into.
He basically turned that into
the Larry King special?
Yes. And it was, you were eager. It's like Brandy Love if she called in for me. I would have just said, nope. No.
Step aside, folks.
You would have Larry King that, huh?
Yes.
Yeah, there was some LK there. There was some LK.
Well, you had a good role going. My question was going to be about the mental makeup of some of the pitchers. And does he have to deal with that?
Well,
especially a young guy being thrown in the rotation.
I think his last answer kind of speaks to it, that he doesn't want any labels, even with Marcus Stroman, who clearly they're looking at as their stud.
Right?
Like, clearly he is the guy. If everything goes according to plan, I think he could finish top five in Cy Young voting this year in the American League. But he's still very young. He hasn't pitched a full season.
I did get the sense, though, from listening to that interview, that he's pretty excited about this kid. Didn't you get that?
Like, absolutely.
Yeah.
Without him basically saying, we are super jacked to watch this guy perform.
He's already got him up for the Cy Young this
year. Oh, 100%, man. If you look at what he's done in his career, he's got like 27 regular season starts, give or take, which isn't even a full healthy season. But you extrapolate that over 32, 33 starts, lights out numbers. Lights out numbers.
Right.
And that's the guy, like, if you're a pitching coach, if you're Pete Walker, you want to attach yourself to that guy.
Right.
That's a career maker.
That's a golden goose, right?
That's a golden goose. That's the young guy who is growing into an absolute beast. But, I mean, he's still got to prove it. Things have to break his way. He has to avoid injury. He's got to, you know, make sure his confidence is there. But this rotation.
I remember.
We'll see.
Well, in St. Louis, we used to hang out with this guy named Ricky Ankiel. Rick Ankiel.
Oh, yeah. He had some problems.
He was a pitcher,
right? He could hit the mascot like Nuke LaLoosh.
Yeah, he was Ricky Vaughn.
Yeah. Like, I didn't know much about it, but, like, he'd hang around. Like, this guy could have a time. But he was, by all accounts, this young ace, right? And then they ended up making him, like, a hitter or like a
outfielder.
An outfielder.
Yeah, he was and he came back and he played in the pros and was, like, a good.
Yeah, he was good.
Good player, good bat. But it got to a point where someone clearly went up to him and said, dude, you can't even sniff the strike zone. You can't do this anymore.
Do you remember watching him? It was Nuke LaLoosh hit the mascot. It was.
Well, the worst was Chuck Knobloch. Chuck Knobloch, he couldn't throw to first base.
He had a mental block where he got the ball at second. He would ground it, field it perfectly. He'd look at first and go into a seizure.
He couldn't do it.
Wasn't Steve Sachs like that for a while?
He was the original guy.
I had a friend who was best friends with Steve Sachs. So I asked him about that mental block, and he said for some reason it just, you know, he'd ground the ball. And he was a real pro, too.
Dude, he was a great player.
I met him on a couple social situations. And I remember asking my friend Rick, like, what's he all about? And he said, you know, there was a patch in his career. He explained it to me, a patch in his career where he couldn't hit first base. And I was like, well, isn't that kind of your job? Like, and he said, like, it got to a point where he'd be in opposing buildings and people would bring these giant gloves behind first base, like,
oh, it was bad.
Mocking him.
It was bad.
I had that fear my whole career. Like, going into training camp every year, I'm like, what if I can't pass it on a guy's tape? Or what if I can't hit the net?
Well, believe
me, you're out of the league. Like, you're done.
Yeah. Well, I had fear every start.
Yeah, like, you never stop a puck
when are the wheels going to fall off? Like, you're, you know, everyone jokes around about it, but pro athletes are hard on themselves.
Every training camp, I'm like, what if this is the year that I'm that guy and I don't have it anymore?
The thing is about baseball, though, it's so routine, and it's very predictable in terms of the position you play.
Right.
Like, if you're a goalie, Noodles, shots can come from everywhere at different speeds. They can be tipped. They can be two-on-one. It can be a power play. It can be a penalty kill.
Yeah.
If you're playing second, it's a grounder, throw it to first, and that's about it. Like, maybe you got to turn a double play. Maybe you got to run and catch the ball, what have you. Maybe you throw to third, throw to home plate.
There's a lot of standard plays where it's like,
there are 8 to 10 plays, literally.
That's kind of what you do, and you master them.
Right.
And that's what gets you to the bigs. Clearly, your bat's got to be applicable from a major league standpoint. But if you're a second baseman, like Knobloch was, Sachs, you got to be able to field it and throw it 20 feet or whatever. And you're going to do it 100 times a year, 200 times a year, not to mention in practice a bunch of times.
Yeah.
And if you just can't do it
mentally,
where do you go from there?
Yeah.
You got a DH or something.
Well,
you can't play the field.
That was the only thing I was going to ask the pitching coach is, like, how much does he work on the mental aspect of his players?
Well, you wonder where this Jimenez, the catcher, is he going to have a problem now?
Yeah, you go to step up and throw to the second base.
Dude, his next five throws are going to be moon balls.
He's going to throw it 75 feet into the air.
He's going to throw it to the center fielder.
The center fielder
is going to catch the next one.
And I wouldn't even blame him.
No, but that's the thing. Like, you know, as a goalie or a scorer, like,
that's
if I allowed a bad goal, you're terrified for that next shot because you're like, is this going to snowball from here?
Awful.
That type of stuff.
And that's where the fans are so ruthless.
Oh, yeah, they're awesome.
So ruthless.
You get the Bronx
cheer. Fans are secretly dying for an athlete to have something really weird wrong with them.
Oh, they're...
So they can destroy it.
Itching for you to have a mental block and for your career to be ruined so they can pick on you a few times a year.
Yeah.
That is how you define a diehard degenerate fan. Anyway, Brian Lewis will join us, former NHL ref and the director of officiating, just after 6 p.m. on the reputation of Nazem Kadri league-wide. And do the refs really have it out for him? And we've got a great, great Dwayne Casey quote from earlier this afternoon.
Yes.
We'll play that later in the afternoon. This is Overdrive, TSN 1050. Overdrive continues, TSN 1050 and on the TSN Go app. The Bar Play Bracket is officially underway on Twitter. So check out O-Dog's Twitter account. Dougie Gilmore, 1993, hitting the bars in Toronto after Game 1 against St. Louis, the OT winner, versus Jose Bautista after Game 5 ALDS bat flip. Whose crew would you rather roll with if they're hitting the bar scene?
I don't know how I screwed that up. I don't know what I don't.
Doesn't matter. It's out there. It's on your account. People can find it. Noodles, you and I, we've retweeted this. The Overdrive account has retweeted this.
Yep.
Right
now. So it's out there.
Did you already say the results?
I have not seen them recently.
Right now, 1,668 votes. Dougie G holding strong at 56%.
That's very close, though. That can swing both ways. This is not determined. This isn't like CNN where they make a projection after 1% of the vote coming in. Plus, we need John King and his dumb election board in here. I don't know if you guys watch CNN. Do you ever see that John King?
No, all he does is confuse people,
and Wolf Blitzer sits there and pretends like he's actually paying attention. He's not.
Rattles people, too.
That's what we need. We need like the sports horn in here with a Bar Play super board, and we'll pretend like we're listening.
When are we going to get into at some point, like not today, but like this Donald Trump and all of this, like this Trump is a master at spinning stuff.
Well, the stuff last week with Ted Cruz and the sex scandal.
Lying Ted Cruz
and National Enquirer having all these stories.
And the best part is he's just drawing attention to it. Like, you know, I haven't read anything, right?
He's playing dumb, but he knows exactly what he's doing. He's trying to get everyone to read this story in the National Enquirer by pretending like he isn't a party to it. He hasn't read it. But then he also brings up, hey, they've been right on a couple other things. So I hope they're not right here. It's such greasy politics.
It is, but it's kind of, I mean.
But that's Trump for you, man.
That is Trump being greasy.
That's what he does. That's how he rolls.
I agree.
Anyway, final hour up next. We're on TSN2. We'll keep updating the Bar Play bracket as well. And Brian Lewis coming up, former NHL ref. That and more coming up. Final hour. This is Overdrive, TSN 1050, and on the TSN Go app.